America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. In the second hour of our program today, we will be talking with David Horowitz about his new hyper-hyped Islamo-Fascism Awareness Week. Should be an entertaining conversation. And, of course, it's Friday. We'll be taking your calls on any topic you want to call on. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room and see a video about our squirrel of the day, or if you want to drop by our blog, AirAmerica.com. And, of course, it being the first hour of Friday, it is time for Senator Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders, the independent from Vermont for nearly two decades, the longest-serving independent in the House of Representatives in the history of this country, now an independent from Vermont in the United States Senate. I think of him as America's senator. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Bernie. The economy, there's a new report out.
There's a new report out which tells people what I'm sure that they're not shocked to hear, and that is that in the United States, the wealthiest people are getting wealthier, and that today we have the most unequal distribution of wealth and income since the 1920s. And what the new study shows, that the top 1% now earns more income than the bottom 50%. 1%, 50%, and that gap is growing wider. And I think this is an issue we've got to focus on because it's not only an issue of social justice, it's an issue of power. When so few have so much power and so many people have so little, it impacts the political and social life of the country, and it is an issue that we've got to address.
It's not healthy for democracy.
It's hard to – Louis Brandeis talked about that many, many years ago. It's hard to understand how you can sustain a vibrant democracy when so few have so much power. They own the media, they own the political process, and so many other people are just struggling, and their main task for the day is to keep their heads above water.
Yeah, and the chairman of the FCC, today's Financial Times, an article about how he's going to hold a vote, apparently at the end of the month, to even reduce the levels of control over media consolidation.
We're going to be actively involved in that issue. We're going to do everything we can to stop it. Clearly, as in many other industries, what you're seeing is more and more concentration of ownership. But in the media, it is different than steel and it's different than agriculture because media determines what people know. It impacts directly on the political process. Let's not forget that today some 30% of the American people still believe that Iraq was involved in attacking us on 9/11.
Yeah, that's a clear failure of our media. Bernie, the Intelligence Committee just reported out a bill that contains essentially immunity for the telco companies, which the telco companies claim they've done nothing wrong. The administration claims they've done nothing wrong. A lot of us are scratching our heads wondering why then do you give them immunity if they're all asserting that there's no crime. And over in, I believe it's Judiciary, Mr. Mukasey is being questioned about becoming the next Attorney General, and he refuses to set aside waterboarding, which we prosecuted an Army major in 1904 for doing during the Spanish-American War. We called it torture in 1904 when we prosecuted one of our own soldiers for doing it.
Well, let's deal with this telephone company immunity and not doing anything wrong. Well, for a start, Tom, you know what? We don't know what's going on to begin with.
Yeah.
It's hard to determine what's right or wrong, and then obviously we can argue about what the word wrong means. But to my mind, the telephone company does not have the right to be tapping people's phone unless they have a court order. And as you know, we have a president who kind of doesn't think that we need an independent judiciary that he can determine, or his administration or the FBI can determine who the bad guys are and then go after them. I believe, you know, that we have got to do everything we can to protect the American people from terrorism. It's a serious issue. But we do it within the context of the United States Constitution. You have a court process. It works as quickly as you want to make it work. But you just cannot simply say, I want to tap this guy's phone and not go to an independent judicial body. So I will not be supportive of giving the phone company immunity. Because if you do it, by the way, prospectively into the future, then who is going to be able to stop them from doing anything they want?
Right?
There's no punishment.
Yeah.
So I think this is I was disappointed to see that kind of vote. And I will not be supporting that. In terms of Mr. Mukasey, I was less than impressed by what he had to say before the Judiciary Committee. You have an administration, as I mentioned a moment ago, that does not respect the Constitution. That is pretty clear. That has attacked civil liberties from day one. And I want to hear an attorney general who say, you know what? I know that we have a separation of powers in this government. I support an independent judiciary. I support the Congress. We are not going to support torture. I want to hear somebody say that loudly and clearly, and I haven't heard Mr. Mukasey say that.
Yeah. Senator Mitch McConnell opposing the S-CHIP program, it's noted that he, as a U.S. senator, gets government-run taxpayer-subsidized insurance through the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program, including free outpatient treatment by doctors in Bethesda.
It's not quite free, but it's a pretty good system.
Yeah, and so he's like, he's all in favor of government-run health care for himself, but not for kids.
Yeah, well, there are two issues here. I mean, you know, it's always hard. When you deal with the Bush administration, one becomes cautious about using the word outrageous, because no matter what you say today, it may be worse tomorrow. But I have to say that vetoing this S-CHIP program really quite takes the cake in terms of domestic policy. We are the only nation in the industrialized world, the only one, that does not provide health care to all people, and certainly all of our children. You got 9 million children in this country today without any health insurance. What some of us are trying to, I want to go much more. I've introduced legislation to provide health care to all of our kids. This bill would expand it to 4 million more kids. Over a 5-year period, it would cost $35 million, $7 million a year. We are now, which Mr. Bush thinks is just so extravagant, we spend $10 million a month, $10 billion a month in Iraq.
So this is 3 weeks in Iraq every year.
That's right, to cover 4 million more kids.
Wow.
Furthermore, it's not just the money, it's the principle. If you hear our Republican friends talking, they are very nervous that the S-CHIP program is infringing on private insurance companies. In other words, you're giving parents now who cannot afford the outrageously high prices that the private insurance companies are charging the opportunity to get into what is, in most cases, well-run government programs. And you know, Tom, if you do that, you know what people may catch on to? Oh, my God.
It's a good thing.
Maybe we should have a national health insurance program. In my state of Vermont, we have a program called the Dr. Dinosaur Program.
Right. Howard Dean helped with that in place.
Howard Dean expanded the program. Very good program. I have not talked to a parent who doesn't think it's a great program. And people are asking, gee, how come my kid has the program? I don't. So what the Republicans, in fact, are very worried about, that is, if you have a successful public program for children, the parents will be asking why we don't have it for the whole country.
Right.
And so it's money, but it's also ideology, and it is absolutely an outrage for Bush to veto that.
More jobs going overseas. Today's Financial Times, I read it this morning, the European Union is criticizing China for their trade policies, and a group of bankers were in China saying the European Union should keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, no doubt. It is incredible. It is, you know, Tom, take a deep breath and you think about it. 20 years ago, what the right wing was talking about is communist China and what a threat it is and how we have to arm the America, have to, you know, protect the United States from this communist tyranny. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. They're going to start a war with Taiwan any week now.
That's
we need
right.
more missiles.
But you know what? You don't hear that too much anymore.
Mm-mm.
They're now wonderful guys, and we love them. And I'm not, you know, I don't, being facetious here, I'm not anti-China. But it is amazing that because corporate America now loves China, because they can build all kinds of plants in China and bring their products back into this country virtually tariff-free, we love China. That leads me to an issue that you're going to be hearing a lot about in the next few months, and that is a series of trade agreements with Peru, with Panama, with Colombia, with South Korea coming down the pike. I think you will see, finally, the United States Congress just beginning to respond to the American public's understanding that our current trade policies are a disaster. There was a poll in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago where almost two-thirds of Republicans believe that our current trade policies were not working for America. Democrats believe that even more strongly. So what you're looking at is a shrinking middle class, an increase in poverty, a huge growing gap between the rich and the poor. Trade is one of the reasons for that phenomenon. We've got to change our trade policies.
Yeah, well said. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. Sanders.senate.gov, his website. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. Bernie will be taking your calls for the rest of the hour. Our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, 16 minutes past the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Yeah, talking with you. 21 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. Our number, 866-303-2270. And Chris in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, thanks for having me, guys. Bernie, I appreciate you coming on every week. It's a great thing.
Thank you, Chris.
Bernie, I was just wondering your take on Ron Paul, since I'm sure you've worked with him in the House before, and especially his take on the economy and whether or not you think the media has given him a fair shot.
Well, that's interesting that you asked me that, Chris. I did work with Ron for many, many years. And what I will say about Ron is a libertarian, and that means he believes that government should play a very, very limited role in our lives. What I will say about Ron is he's an honest guy. He is a decent guy. He has cast very, very difficult votes. He's a man of principle. I have worked with him on a number of issues regarding trade, civil liberties, and so forth. On the other hand, his views are very different than mine. I think if Ron had his way, he would be calling for the abolition of the minimum wage, abolition of Social Security, abolition of Medicaid, because he doesn't think the government should play much of a role in people's lives. So I disagree with him philosophically, but he happens to be a decent guy and a principled guy. In terms of media, I think because he is kind of out there, despite the fact that he has a certain amount of grassroots support, he probably does not get the kind of media attention that some media creation like Mr. Thompson would get. And I think his point of view probably deserves more coverage.
It's interesting. He has more money right now than John McCain, and yet he keeps winning these polls and things. I mean, it's really quite extraordinary.
And as I said before, he's a very interesting guy and a man of principle. I respect him and consider him a friend, although obviously I have strong disagreements with him.
Yeah, he's been on this program a couple of times, too. I always got the sense that he was a very good guy. Jim in Denver, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, guys. Senator Sanders, last month I called and asked you about a law that gives tax breaks to corporations for exporting jobs to countries like China and India. And that law was addressed in David K. Johnson's book, Perfectly Legal. You said it was an issue that has to be addressed, and I was just wondering, is there somebody taking on that issue, and who can I contact to see how they're doing about that?
Byron Dorgan of North Dakota has been very active in that. When I was in the House, we were working on those issues as well. But I would start off with Byron Dorgan of North Dakota.
Thank you. John in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, good morning, guys. Tom, you're a genius. I've met you a couple of times, and I wish our president would be as smart as you. And, Bernie, you're a great person. But my question to you, Bernie, is I am, you know what, I'm a Democrat. I love this country, but I am one pissed-off American on why it seems like the Democrats can't pass anything, especially if we're in charge of the House and Senate. I don't understand how any of this is working. And this child health care is just what finally just made me just want to boil.
All right, but, John, here's the point. The Democrats did pass the legislation. Bush has vetoed it, and it takes two-thirds of the House and Senate to override it. Now, ironically, on that particular issue, in the Senate, we probably do have 67 votes. A number of Republicans are working with us. In the House, they don't. So you can blame the Democrats for a lot. You can blame the Democrats for not being more aggressive, and I think that's fair enough. On this particular issue, they did pass it. Bush vetoed it, and we don't have two-thirds of the House to override it.
Right, and all but two Democrats in the House of Representatives voted to override the veto, so it was virtually 100% of the Democrats.
This particular one, the blame is totally on President Bush and on the Republicans.
Yeah, and we should note, just for the record, that Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat.
Right.
Robert in Los Angeles, California, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, I've been a fan of yours for a very, very, very long time, way back when you was when you was in the House and you was doing stuff for on behalf of health care, and you was comparing it to Canada and how well it was doing. I still have that speech, by the way. My question to you, since it's been told that a number of military families are so poor they qualify for welfare, has anybody done any research about military families that are eligible for SCHIP and used that particular chip, if you will, pardon the pun, to beat the Republicans over the head about that voted against funding children's health care?
Well, Robert, that's a very good point. There is no question that there are military families who qualify for food stamps, at least. We know that some of our soldiers who are coming back from Iraq with PTSD, for example, who are having a very difficult time getting work, are really struggling economically. And we also know that, and this is an issue we're going to be talking about a whole lot, ironically, that in Iraq today, you have military personnel working for Blackwater who will make five times as much money as an American soldier putting his or her life on the line every single day. So I think you make a good point. But in terms of children's health care, the issue here is that no child in America should lack health insurance. In fact, no American should lack health insurance. We are the only country in the industrialized world that does not provide health care to all of its people. And that is an issue we just have got to keep pushing and fighting for.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see the Democrats, though, out there saying Bush wants to deny child health care to our children, to the military kids. That would be an interesting strategy. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He's taking your calls, 866-303-2270, 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls. Marie in Tempe, Arizona. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi, and God bless you both. You both are true patriots. I just thank both of you for speaking truth to power. You're just absolutely wonderful, both of you.
Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
I have two questions. The first question is, I'm legally blind, and because I'm blind, I can use the Randolph-Shepard Act and get into local, state, and federal. How would you support, and I don't know how this would work, but I agree with you. Everybody should have adequate information. The citizens are so ill-informed. Is there anything that you would suggest for me working with others that I can do to get the information out through the Randolph-Shepard Act? And my second question is that I have seen signs that Bush isn't looking so well. Is there any way of us demanding a psychological evaluation on him? With his finger on the button, I think that it's crucial that we know his mental health.
Well,
thank you, Marie.
Well, I suppose somebody could request that, but I don't think that is going to happen.
But question number one, how can a blind person, or frankly anybody, be most effective in helping the progressive movement in the United States?
Well, I think the Internet has opened up extraordinary opportunities. I think the ability to create large email lists and communicate on a regular basis and try to reach out to people who just don't always have your point of view on issues which are relevant to them. Take them from where they are and grow their consciousness. There's just an enormous amount of work to be done in that area because it really concerns me that increasingly people get their, who are working so hard, trying to keep their heads above water, they turn on the TV and they see Paris Hilton or Britney Spears or Anna Nicole Smith, and it seems to me that that is just almost part of a process trying to deflect people's attention away from the real issues facing them. And I think the Internet is one way that opens up an opportunity for people to hear a different point of view.
Drew in Reedsboro, Vermont. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. Your senator.
Yes, how are you?
Good.
Senator Sanders, I see that Chris Dodd has a hold on that FISA bill. Is that, in fact, still in effect?
Well, we'll see. That was just announced yesterday. I mean, hold is not the end of the world. I will certainly be voting against that FISA bill if it, and trying to make it a better bill. The way it is written right now, giving immunity to the phone companies is absolutely unacceptable to me. And I will work with Chris in every way that I can.
Yeah. So, Nick in Cliffside Park, New Jersey, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. Senator Bernie Sanders, it's a pleasure just to say the words. Senator Sanders, I respectfully suggest that it's time that we Democrats started playing real hardball politics. And a good place to start that would be to use the S-CHIP veto and the sustaining of that veto as the point of a spear, or perhaps I should say a point of a wooden stake that could be applied to the heartlessness of the Republicans who supported or that or who sustained that veto. I realize that we can pass sustaining resolutions to keep the existing program going, but I hope that Reid and Pelosi do not compromise away this issue, frankly, because it's not just a matter of politics, it's a matter of policy, and it's a matter of having respect for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. This is one of those issues where you have to go to the mats, and I think that means, in this case, passing the bill again in a month or two or as soon as it's legally possible and passing it over and over and over and over and putting enough light on this issue so that either the Republicans will see the light and cave in like they should, or the November 08 elections will come up, and anybody who dares to vote against this issue deserves to be thrown out of office on their ear. I mean, my God, 82% of the American people want this program. If Democrats had done this and the Republicans were in office, they'd be crucifying us right now.
Nick, I think you make a good point, and I agree with everything that you said. What I would add to it is we need grassroots activism all over this country to put pressure on those Republicans who supported the president's veto.
Mark in Oakland, California, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, it's a great pleasure to speak with you. And Tom, as always, I listen to your show with great enthusiasm. Senator, one of the issues that I have, and I believe you mentioned this sometime last week, as a matter of fact, that the Wartime Profiteering Act is in a committee to be studied at this time. I believe that should be brought out of committee ASAP and brought to the floor of the Senate and the House.
I agree with you absolutely, Mark.
And if for no other reason to put the Republicans on record as to their position in regards to this issue, this is an appalling situation that I believe would severely undercut the economic incentives to keep our nation at war. What is the current status, and do you believe that can happen anytime within?
Well, I will do my best to make sure that it does happen. I mean, what we are seeing right now is that certainly one of the causes of the problems in Iraq is that the people in many instances are worse off economically in terms of electricity, in terms of their infrastructure than they were before the war. We have pumped billions and billions of dollars into Iraqi reconstruction without a heck of a lot of success, and I think the American people need to know who has gotten that money, where the profiteering is. In addition to that, I think we need to take a hard look at privatization within the military, a la Blackwater, why it is that soldiers fighting within Blackwater earn far more than American soldiers earn, the kind of profits that Blackwater and other private contractors are making. As I think many listeners know, this president wants to do as much as he can to privatize what government is doing, give it over to large multinational corporations. Certainly that's a lot. That's certainly taking place in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have to shed a bright light on that, and we have to reverse those policies.
Craig in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Tom, you've got the smartest listeners in radio.
I agree.
I swear, they're just they come up with such interesting questions. Senator Sanders and Tom Hartman, I'm really honored to talk to both of you. I have a comment, and Senator Sanders, I wanted to get your feeling on this. My feeling is that although there's a number of reasons why the Democrats don't just step forward and say, okay, you'd better get us out of this war or we're going to shut down government. You know, the way Republicans did back in Clinton's time. The reason I think there is a number of reasons for that, but I think the top three are media, media, and media. Because the media, because of their abhorrent treatment of anyone who dissents from this insane capitalism and militarism for, you know, at any cost. Can I get your feeling about that?
Well, what I would say is, if you remember the shutdown when Clinton was president, that was Newt Gingrich. Clinton won that confrontation, hands down, and it was part of the resurrection of Clinton.
It was the beginning of the end for Newt, too.
That's right. So I'm not sure the American people want the government to be shut down. I think that they would think that that would be very irresponsible. I understand, and appropriately so, that there is huge frustration with regard to the war in terms of the loss of life, $10 billion a month, the lowering of the esteem that people hold this country all over the world. And I, along with Russ Feingold and some others, are trying to do everything we can to get us out of this war as soon as possible. I think, frankly, the elections that are coming up will determine what happens. If we can elect a number of people who are prepared to support legislation like that introduced by Senator Feingold, which will bring our troops home very, very soon, change our entire approach toward fighting international terrorism. Things in Afghanistan, for example, are not going well. Things in Pakistan are not going well. Al-Qaeda is resurging all over the world. We need to change policies. And I think this election will be pivotal in determining which way we go.
Amen. Linda in San Diego, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. We have about a minute before we have to take a break. Linda? Linda?
I'm here. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Quickly, please.
I wanted to talk about a news article that came out, not really a question, but I'm in San Diego, and about a month ago, there was a short report about, in the middle of the night, people coming to one of our North City shores, which is a very populated area, and there were wetsuits and a boat found left there. That is not how the people coming up to work get into this country. And these stories were just buried. There was no follow-through about it. And to me, that's a frightening violation of our border.
So,
far more than people, obviously, than the people coming to work.
Yeah. So it could be terrorists, or it could be drug smugglers, or it could be criminals. Bernie, we'll get your thoughts on that and continue phone calls after this break, okay?
Okay.
All righty. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270, sanders.senate.gov, Bernie Sanders website. It's a great website. TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com as well for us. Stick around.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Welcome back. We're going on the road. My new book, Cracking the Code, is out, and on November 3rd, I'll be in Albuquerque signing books at Hastings Books and Music at 5 p.m. On November 5th, in Portland, Oregon, at Powell's Bookstore. On November 9th, at an event that KPHX is co-sponsoring in Phoenix at Changing Hands Bookstore in Tempe. And also coming up the weekend after this one, I'll be in Seattle on October 26th at Elliott Bay Bookstore. And on the following day, I'll be down at Sonoma State University receiving the first prize in the Project Censored Awards. I'm sharing it with Robert Perry. He and I won the first prize in Project Censored. Great honor. And I'll be also giving a speech there at that gig. So just as a heads up. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us.
What I want to know is Bernie. What you do in your spare time. How do you do all
those things? Yeah, spare time.
How do you write
that?
Books, do radio shows, run around the country? You're a hero to millions. So
well, thank you. I'm a hyperactive kid who grew up, Bernie. That's really the bottom line, and I'm still hyperactive. Our last caller, just before we went to the break, was talking about, she lives in San Diego, about a story about some wetsuits
that
were found.
I just don't know anything about that, I have to say.
Okay. All right. I guess it leads to the larger question of, you know, what's the best way to concern ourselves with terrorism in the United States?
That's right. And it's very clear that there are a lot of areas that we are not going into that we should. For example, there's a lot of concern about how we protect our ports from nuclear weapons that might be slipped in.
Yeah, yeah. And it just it ain't being done, it seems. Joe in Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Bob, Senator Sanders, this is an honor, gentlemen. Bernie, I have a question for you. I was listening to Fox one evening with Alan Combs, and he had a very, very boisterous tone referred to you as a socialist. I really know that's not the case, but what I'd like to know from you, Senator, do you think there's an opportunity in this country for a movement towards more of a social democratic party? Right. I'll get off the line and listen to your answer, sir.
Well, I am a democratic. I am a democratic socialist, which is, as you know, there have been very successful democratic socialist parties all over Europe and in Scandinavia. If you look at some of the
countries, they run most of the European countries.
Right. I mean, sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, but they certainly have been in and out of power for the last, you know, 70, 80 years. And if you look, and we don't pay enough attention to this, Tom, and that's a good question that was asked. If you look at what goes on in Scandinavia, for example, you have health care for all people, free college education, strong environmental programs. People would be amazed to know what happens when a woman has a baby, the amount of time she could get off from work at full pay or partial pay, the kind of unemployment, social security benefits that are available to people. What they have done is create mixed economies with a very strong social safety net that protects working families while at the same time allows for entrepreneurial spirit to create wealth. And I think that's the direction that we have got to go in. Right now what we have is just an extremist-type capitalism, which says that, you know, we don't have to protect workers, we don't have to protect the seniors, we don't have to protect the disabled. As much money as the wealthy and large corporations can make is what it's all about. And that's why we have such an unequal distribution of wealth and income, and why working people are finding it harder and harder to economically survive. So I think there's a lot to be learned from Scandinavia and Europe in terms of healthcare, education, and basically the social safety network, which is protecting their people.
Yeah, and you look at those democratic socialist nations in Scandinavia, and I've spent time in all of them, and you find they have among the lowest infant mortality rates in the world, among the longest lifespans in the world, among the healthiest people, the most well-educated people. Norway is the highest country in the world in terms of literacy. Every index you can look at, lowest suicide rates, every index you can look at for quality
amazing.
Of life.
What is amazing is how little we look at those countries.
Right.
Do we want to copy everything from them? No, we don't. But there is a lot to be learned about countries which put a lot into early childhood education and making sure that their kids get off to a good start in life, and then they end up having very low incarceration rates. In this country, we have the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world, 18% of our kids. And guess what? We have more people behind jail. Great surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Glenn in Carteret, New Jersey,
Carteret.
Am I pronouncing? Carteret, okay. Glenn, you're on the air.
Hello, Senator Sanders. It's a pleasure speaking with you, sir. First time for me to ever speak to somebody in such a high office.
Thank you, Glenn.
I just want to real quickly throw at you here your ideas. I was reading an article in a magazine a couple weeks ago that basically said the Supreme Court basically kind of like agreed upon a ruling that they shot down. I think it was in Maine. Forgive me, I'm wrong here. And it's related to campaign finance limits. And I wanted to ask you, is it a realistic, I guess, pursuit or based on the Supreme Court ever changing their mind at the justice end? If the conflict of interest that's unspoken with corporations and lobbyists and stuff to people in office, obviously having money, seem to be insulated from having any real debate with somebody that's really on the ground in a town or in a community or in an area to have.
Glenn, you're absolutely right. And Glenn, you know, if Supreme Court decisions weren't changed, we would still have segregation in this country and all kinds of other things. Of course, the Supreme Court is going to end up responding to the social climate that exists out there. And in terms of campaign finance, you touch on an enormously important issue. I personally doubt very much that we will have the kind of political transformation we need in this country, where ordinary people have power, where we protect the middle class rather than billionaires, unless we move toward public funding of elections. The idea that money is free speech, that you have huge sums of money and you can buy elections, that if I try to limit you, I'm limiting your constitutional right to free speech, I've got a real problem with that. Free speech does not mean buying elections. And that's an issue that we are going to continue to aggressively pursue.
Yeah, and hopefully one day, certainly not with John Roberts in charge, but hopefully one day the Supreme Court will change its mind.
That's right.
I guess that's another good argument for electing a Democrat as president, because there are going to be some openings coming up inevitably in the next decade.
There sure will.
So, Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
You're very welcome, Tom.
Great talking with you. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. Coming up next, David Horowitz, here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Islamofascism Awareness Week, rolling out October 22 through 26th. That's next week. David Horowitz, the guy behind all this, the author of his most recent book, Shadow Party, How George Soros, Hillary Clinton's 60s Radicals Seized Control of the Democratic Party. I guess counting myself as one of those guys. I wish we actually had seized control of the Democratic Party. David's website, terrorismawareness.org. David Horowitz, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be back.
Thank you. I got an email here from a fellow who, he didn't know that you were going to be coming on the program. He just says, Tom, during the week of October 22nd, et cetera, college campuses and universities are going to host Islamofascism Awareness Week. He says, Tom, I'm a Muslim Arab American, and I cannot see anything more damaging to the freedom of religion and tolerance than this action. Although this movement might target, it's only two more sentences. Let me just finish it, and then I'll give you a chance to respond. Although this movement might target this small group of extremist Muslims, it results in labeling the whole religion as a terrorist religion. We Muslims and Arabs renounce terrorism, and we want to live peacefully and help build this nation and keep it at the pinnacle of world progress. Please help raise awareness against this Awareness Week.
Well, the way to do it would be to join the Islamofascism Awareness Week and denounce the fascists who are using the Quran. I mean, if he's upset by the association of Muslims with terror, he should, you know, send his emails to Zawahiri and to Ahmadinejad, who are, you know, always invoking the Quran as the justification for their mass murder.
But that's essentially precisely what happened right after 9/11. We had one of the largest protests in the world in favor of the United States, in support of the United States, and opposing Islamic terrorism, if you want to use that phrase, was in Tehran, Iran. I mean, why has Hamas on the West Bank through an election, and Hezbollah in southern Lebanon not with an election, why have they taken so much power? It's not because they're sticking guns in people's faces, it's because they're feeding people, they're running hospitals, they're running schools. Why can't we take a lesson from them, and instead of trying to scare the hell out of people, help people?
You think Hitler didn't run schools and hospitals? These are
of course he did. He was so popular, he was on the cover of Time magazine as the man of the year.
These are Nazis, and when your emailer or caller is willing to call them Nazis, then he can come and join us in Islamofascism Awareness Week, which is a week to awake people to the oppression of women in Islam, the 130 million girls who have their genitals sliced off observe some barbaric 7th century code.
That's Are you opposed to male circumcision as well?
Pardon?
Are you opposed to male circumcision as well?
I actually am.
Yeah, are you opposed to it as a practice?
As a circumcised male, yeah, I think I was mutilated.
Yeah, okay. I'm just curious. You know, it's like what's good for the goose is good for the gator.
So you
think that there's Jewish fascism as well. Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think that's fascism. Maybe you've never seen one of these circumcisions. You can go up on our website at terrorismawareness.org.
I realize how horrible female genital mutilation is. And I also know that it's not part of Islam. It's more cultural than it is religious.
Not done medically. And
it's not prescribed by Islam.
Wait, and it's designed, unlike the you know, it's not just the Jewish version, they do it in hospitals regularly. Unlike that version, which just takes off the foreskin, this is designed to take away the pleasure.
No, I understand, and I agree with you that there's an order of magnitude greater horror.
The
point
term Islamofascism was coined by Algerian Muslims who were being slaughtered by these radicals. 200,000 of them were killed by an organization called Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. We're standing up for moderate Islam. I do not, for the life of me, well, of course I do understand, but I don't see how other progressives can go along with these attacks on Islamofascism Awareness Week.
Then I assume that you are coming out against the ongoing occupation of Iraq, given that that seems to be the thing that is the greatest drivers.
Iraq by terrorists from Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Of course I am.
So you're in favor of the United States maintaining its true presence there.
I'm on our side in the war on terror, even though Air America is on. Seems to be more sympathetic to the other side.
So you think that there is a war on a tactic?
No, but Tom, that's exactly what Islam. I am holding Islamofascism Awareness Week in part because the President of the United States is intimidated by Islamofascists at CARE and at the Muslim Students Association.
I think he loves them. I think he's embracing them. He's been the greatest gift to the radical right in Islam that anybody in the world has been. Osama bin Laden, who was an obscure guy with maybe 20,000 followers, and turned him into the hero of a billion people.
But to get back to the subject, Bush tried to use the term Islamofascism. He did it for one day, and he was denounced by all your friends who are the Islamofascists. What do you think CARE is about? Who do you think created CARE? The Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas.
CARE?
Who created the Muslim Students Association? The Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. These people who pretend to be civil libertarians and pretend to care about Muslims are the fascists.
So the Irish Republican Army used to blow up people and kill people.
Adams is a fascist and a murderer.
I'm not disagreeing with you there, David. Hang on just a second. And yet the IRA has been transformed into a good player in Europe and embraced
IRA
in the UK.
Not a religious sect and Hamas.
Why? You think Catholicism is not a religion?
Do I think what?
You cannot be the IRA is all about being Catholic and driving the Protestants out of Ireland. So my question is, my point is, why not, if you've got somebody who is coming after you, why not embrace them and work with them and try to bring them into the family of humanity rather than trashing them and doing exactly what they're doing in a way that only strengthens them?
You know, Neville Chamberlain tried to negotiate with Hitler.
I'm not talking about negotiating.
Well, what are you talking about?
I am talking, well...
Hamas...
Chamberlain didn't want to negotiate with Hitler. Chamberlain wanted to roll over for Hitler. That's a whole different thing.
The extermination of the Jews. They are Nazis. When they renounce that, then you can deal with them.
Well, okay. At a certain level...
Why is it me? Why do I have to stop, not call them by their right name, which is Nazi... Why do I have to renounce that in order to get them to the table? They're murderers.
I'm not suggesting that...
reform themselves, and then we'll talk.
We all want to condemn anybody who calls for the extermination of any people, particularly Islamists who call for the extermination of Jews. Absolutely.
Good.
As well as Christians who call for the extermination of Jews. Yes. I'm assuming that you're calling out Ann Coulter now for saying that Jews are not as good as Christians, that they're not complete.
No, that is, I think, first of all, let's go back to this other thing.
I'm just mystified by all this hate on your side.
I'm trying to make an alliance here. If you, if you understand that when Hamas calls for the extermination of the Jews, they're Nazis, then I would like you to get a representative from the Muslim Students Association on your program and get him to denounce Hamas. And that when that happens, we have a dialogue.
I condemn Hamas or Hezbollah or, for that matter, Arafat, Fatah for a long, long time was saying that they were calling for the extermination. I absolutely condemn all of that.
I welcome you as an ally here. If I had known that, I would have invited you to speak on the
That's not the single issue here. I mean, you're essentially saying, and you've got your petition over there, and it seems to me that the strategy that you're pursuing here is you've got this petition. The goal of Islamo-fascist jihadists is world domination, suppression of infidels, a war against gays, women, Christians,
that's
Jews.
Straight out of Osama bin Laden.
And then you're asking Islamic organizations on campus to sign this. And, of course, they're not going to sign this.
Would you ask Germans to sign a petition to denounce German fascism?
Would you sign a petition to denounce Christo-fascism?
Absolutely. Okay. Wouldn't you?
I probably would, actually.
And we have Christian fascists in this country. It's the Ku Klux Klan.
Why don't you denounce the crackpots on the right as well, like Ann Coulter? I mean, why not be an equal opportunity denouncer here, David Horowitz?
I don't think of Ann Coulter as a crackpot. I think of her as a great ally. I think of her. How do you think of Al Franken? You think he's a crackpot?
No, I think he's a good guy.
Okay, well,
I don't see where he's got a dog in this fight.
I see Ann and Al as, two sides of that particular form of argument. I think she's much funnier than he is.
I don't recall Al saying that people of my religion, Christians, are superior to people of your religion, Judaism.
Every Christian believes that, how can you be a Christian and not believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no one gets to the Father but by him? Since that's what he said, why do you want to ask Christians not to be Christians? What you want to ask them is not to burn Jews at the stake. And since there's no Christians proposing that I know of,
you're agreeing with that, Ann Coulter. Okay, David Horowitz, we're out of time, David. Terrorismawareness.org is the website. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
And a bit in outer space, I guess. And let me just, for the record, as I said to David Horowitz, I guess it could have been construed that I was trying to conflate female genital mutilation, which is called circumcision in Africa, with male circumcision, and that was dumb. That was dumb. Although I am not a fan of circumcision, being somebody who it was done to myself. But nonetheless, it's just, they're completely different things. So for the record, 21 minutes past the hour, David Horowitz brings up this issue of, should we be afraid of the Islamo-fascisms, Islamo-fascists? And Zach and Larry Arnstein have a new book out, The Ultimate Counterterrorist Home Companion. The subtitle, 6 Incapacitating Holds Involving a Spatula and Other Ways to Protect Your Family. Zach and Larry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you with us. So David has alerted us to the problem. They're out to get us. They're coming to get us. And you guys have written the book with the solutions. For example, planning your family anti-terrorism drill. What to do when little Lucy can't assemble her Matador 25B anti-tank rocket launcher in under 37 seconds. What do you do?
Well, exactly. We think that our job here is sort of bridge the gap between people like Horowitz and other politicians out there who are spreading awareness, Giuliani and or awareness mongering, if you will, and show people what they can actually do at home to be engaged in this problem. We don't want people worrying too much about, the war in Iraq and all, civil liberties and all those complicated issues that you guys were just talking about. But what Americans can do is defend their little piece of America, and this book is going to show you how.
Okay, so how do I do it?
Well, a moat, it would be a good idea.
A moat?
A moat.
Dig a moat around my house?
Yeah.
Well, I already have one, actually. I live on a houseboat.
But are there alligators in your moat?
There's a river otter out there that's pretty nasty, I'll tell you.
I don't know if terrorists are afraid of river otters.
Yeah, so we need to get some alligators in the river here. Okay.
Yeah.
So, moat around your house. What do you do if your child brings home a suspicious playmate? This is chapter 5.
Interrogate. Absolutely. You got to interrogate the little kid, and you have to do it in little chunks because they'll clam up if you don't give them cookies and milk and stuff in between the sessions.
And you can't trust anyone. I mean, you know, I've seen Mission Impossible. I know the kind of masks people are capable of making. You could think you're talking to your friend's sweet little innocent friend, but it could be a midget terrorist in disguise.
Ah, so how do you waterboard a 10-year-old?
Well, I wouldn't suggest waterboarding for 10-year-olds. I think you can get more information just by prodding, asking them, leading questions about what their family religious is. You can ask if the youngster has brothers and sisters and what they think about jihad. Just draw out this neighborhood network.
Yeah. Now, chapter 12 of your book, No Longer Relevant Concepts, Civil Liberties, the Multi-Party System, and Karaoke. I agree with the karaoke part.
Yeah, well, civil liberties is, an old, I think it's quaint and naive. Isn't that what we decided about the civil liberties?
Yeah, that was Mr. Gonzalez's decision.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's just not relevant anymore.
Well, the world is just a different place since 9/11. We can't be clinging on to these innocent, original ideas that we had for America back when we didn't have enemies and we hadn't faced any wars. I mean, this is a new world. We have to really reconsider who we are.
Yeah, you're right. We've never fought a war before. We've never been attacked before.
No,
That war of 1812, that didn't happen when the British burned the White House.
We used to worry about things like, underarm order and nuclear war with Russia, but all sorts of other things that really were not really genuine threats to us.
Yeah, we're talking with Zach Arnstein and Larry Arnstein, the authors of The Ultimate Counterterrorist Home Companion, 6 Incapacitating Holds Involving a Spatula and Other Ways to Protect Your Family. Securing Your Home, Chapter 8, Securing Your Home, Booby Traps, Landmines, Strategic Mail Opening Strategies.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Well, you have to plant a minefield, of course, in your front yard, but the key to that is a map. You have to know where the mines are, or else it just becomes a big nuisance.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like a spider. You know, he knows which little strings are sticky and which little strings aren't sticky. That's how he's able to turn his little piece of America, if you will, if you want to think of the spider as an American family.
Yeah.
And that's what we want people to do with their home. Make it just as tight as that spider web so that their little corner of America becomes part of a giant spider web of America. That's how we're going to defeat the terrorists.
Well, and speaking of family, we only have about 30 seconds left here. Chapter 18, are there terrorists in your own family? No. Are you sure?
Absolutely. There probably are, Tom, especially in your family. I've listened to your show, and I suspect you have terrorists in
my
your family.
My cat, Higgins! He is a terrorist.
All the fascist friends you have is what we just heard about from Mr. Horowitz.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And finally, avoiding God's wrath by banning gay marriage. This seems something we should get on right away, right?
Absolutely. It's we all know how God feels about gays, and if you don't personally know, then we know they're from experts.
So the terrorists are out to get us, and God is too. Zach Arnstein and Larry Arnstein, The Ultimate Counterterrorist Home Companion. It's actually a really funny read. It's a great book. You guys have done a great job. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
And it highlights the absurdity of so much of the terror that's being inflicted upon us, on we the people. We'll be taking your calls right after this, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Lonely feeling deep inside. Find a corner where I can hide. Silent footsteps crowding me. Sudden darkness, but I can see.
Four minutes past the hour, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, our website, the amazing squirrel up at the top today, and airamerica.com if you want to participate in our blog. Mohammed in San Diego, California. Hey, Mohammed, welcome to the program.
Mr. Hartman, thank you so much for taking my phone call.
You're welcome.
I just want to ask a question before I make any comment. Have you heard of the documentary called Peace Propaganda in Promised Land?
No, I have not.
Please, if you watch this on Google, I think I encourage that to all Americans to watch this documentary. It's on Google for free. It's called Peace Propaganda in Promised Land.
Okay, Louise is writing it down as you speak. We will check it out when we get off the air.
Please, please. I mean, if Americans watch this documentary, I came here in 1980. I'm from Afghanistan. And I'm grateful and I am very grateful to be in America. But what it bothers me is the most is all of these allegations that they make on Muslim people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all caused by aggression, by oppression. Everything has been done to Palestinian people. I mean, Muslim people, one thing, when they hear a Muslim is getting killed, they go crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, and I think that that's broadly true of any religion or any group that identifies itself as part of a group. I mean, there's just it's a natural human instinct to say, hey, these are my folks, and you know, we're getting the short end of the stick here. We're being hurt, and we have to rally to our defense. By the way, let me just toss out a video that I think is pretty mind-boggling, and that is The Power of Nightmares by Adam Curtis. It's a three-hour series that was published on the BBC, and you can Google that, Power of Nightmares, and it's amazing. But anyhow, your point, Mohammed, was what?
I denounce terrorism or aggression by name of any religion, whether it's Christian, Jews, or Muslim.
I agree, and this is I absolutely agree with you, and thank you for making that statement. And this is where you know, I can't speak for David Horowitz. I'm just concerned that this administration still has General Boykin in charge. You know, in a position of power, a position of authority, the guy who said my God is bigger than their gods, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it concerns me. I think that we need to denounce all forms of I don't even want to call it fascism, because fascism is the merging of state and business, and all forms of authoritarianism. Sheldon in Calabasas, California. Hey, Sheldon.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I know you always do, and it's because of your mellow Taurus nature. I'm the astrologer.
Uh-huh.
Who sent you a little something, and you're talking about Mercury retrograde, and since Thursday, when it went into retrograde, there have been so many conflagrations and infernos on the 5 freeway coming into Los Angeles. A major artery was blocked up for like 3 days because of this Mercury. 12 big rigs crashed into each other, and it's like the only way in from the north. But that's not what I wanted to talk to you about. All.
Okay.
I have written a proposal for a 7-party system with 3 on the left, 3 on the right, and 1 in the middle, according to the planets and colors.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 on the left are going to be blue for the blue collar, green for the greens, obviously, and purple for the, well, the lunatic left fringe. White is the center because you have to have a centrist party, and good government comes from the center.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the right, you have your red party, which is the neocons, red for blood, the orange for the Christian conservatives,
mm-hmm.
and the yellow for the libertarian Wall Streeters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's interesting. You're going to have to either get instant runoff voting through, or you're going to have to change the Constitution so we don't have first past the post winner take all elections. But I'm all in favor of more parties. Sheldon, thanks a lot for sharing that with you. It's an interesting idea. Gordon in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Gordon.
Hello.
It is Anything Goes Friday, after all. What's up, Gordon?
Who am I speaking with?
You are talking with Tom Hartman, and you're on the air.
Okay, Tom. Yeah, I didn't recognize your voice. Yes, I was a co-sponsor of Secular Islamic Summit in St. Petersburg, Florida, in March. It came up with a declaration.
You are Muslim?
What's that?
You are Muslim, Gordon?
No, I'm a humanist. I was a co-sponsor of it in order to bring Muslims together who wanted to be outspoken about some of the anti-human rights concerns that they had. And I just thought if I could just briefly read just a paragraph from the declaration.
No, you can't, but you can tell us about it, because we just don't do reading on the program, but you're welcome to explain it to us or tell us what the point is.
Well, the point of the conference was to enable We felt that only Islamists themselves would be the best to have an influence on moderation within Islam, and there were several hundred people at the conference, and it was widely publicized outside of the United States, but the American media really didn't cover it very well. And it was an effort on their part to acknowledge that no colonialism, racism, or so-called Islamophobia in submitting Islamic practices to criticism or condemnation when they violate human reason and rights. And then they spoke of some of the kind of things that Horowitz was speaking of, but without using the label of fascism and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think it was
a very good moderating influence. A lot of people have criticized Islamists for not criticizing, for being unwilling to accept criticism from, for some of the anti-women practices and the discrimination.
Well, you have Christianists who are also unwilling to accept criticism. I think any religion that is at its core evangelical is going to be reactive in that way. But good on you, Gordon, for the conference. I just want to say how sad it is that Muslims feel, like Muhammad calling the program a few minutes ago, it makes me feel sad that Muslims feel that they have to call in and make statements on the air that they're against terrorism. And folks running around promoting this meme of Islamofascism and Islamofascism Awareness Week, this is the kind of stuff that promotes, in my opinion, that promotes that us versus them mentality, which we need less of, not more of, in these United States and around the world. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. Adam in Los Angeles. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to add my testimony. I knew David Horowitz way back in the day when I was at Stanford. I was the chief researcher on Rampart's magazine's greatest cover story, the CIA Air America Revelations. And I just want to say I was 21, and David was among the bigger big shots, although he had nothing to do with that article. But he was a very cold man who hardly ever went out for the sun and had no resemblance to the rest of us. That's what I want you to know. And he's made most of his career by bad-mouthing the left, but really he describes only himself.
Yeah.
And that's how we can get to such a twisted place.
Adam, I'm going to thank you for calling and sharing that with us. But David's not here to defend himself, and I really don't want this to be about personalities. That's the problem that I have with what's going on the right, is that they try to turn everything into a personal attack, attack the messenger rather than the message. Rush Limbaugh, for example, yesterday or the day before on his program, talking about how he deals with reporters he doesn't like.
You know what? We're going to find out where your kids go to school. We're going to find out who you knocked up in high school. We're going to find out what drugs you used. We're going to find out where you go to drink and do. We're going to find out how you paid for your house. We're going to do what we're going to do exact, and we're going to say that, you know what, you are no different than Al Goldstein. You both masturbate. You're no different than Al Goldstein, and you're both journalists.
Yeah. And I want to say, no, it's time for us to try to establish dialogue and reach across rather than just trashing folks. Bob in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob.
Yeah. Say, Tom, I don't want this to sound like a personal attack. What Congressman Pete Stark said yesterday, I think, was not only accurate, but I think it was kind of mild. I'm sure you're aware of the book On the Couch
by Justin Frank. Yeah, he's been on this program, in fact, when the book first came out about 3 years ago.
Right,
yeah, Bush on the Couch.
Revealed W's development chronologically, where he apparently took delight in blowing up frogs when he was a child.
Yeah.
When he was in the fraternity, he enjoyed enthusiastically hazing the freshmen as they would come into the fraternity. And, of course, later on, him and Gonzalez setting all-time records when he was governor of Texas, executing more people than any governor has in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
And, of course, you've probably...
Bob, I know that background, and I know that Justin Frank and a number of other people in the psychological and psychiatric community are concerned that George Bush may be suffering from a form of sociopathy, a lack of ability to empathize with others. And I'm frankly concerned about that as well. But I think that we still need to keep talking about the policy. And I think that when Pete Stark said that Bush is – blowing people up for his own amusement, I think that he made a mistake. I wouldn't say that.
Tom, do you think when John Dean in Conservatives Without a Conscience exposes the authoritarian type personalities that are dominating the Republican Party, do you think that's relevant?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, okay. I think that's very relevant. And I think, as I said, I think what Justin Frank has to say is relevant. But I think to turn it into a soundbite or a bumper sticker or to call somebody out based on their personality rather than based on their policies or to try and conflate their personality and policies is a political mistake. I understand what Peek's, I understand where he was coming from. And I understand his outrage. I think it's time for there to be more outrage about the policy. I mean, we've got thousands of people dying every week. Bob, thank you for the call.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
There goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice. And there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ.
Yeah, here I am. I think I'm the last DJ. Welcome back, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Patrick Leahy, I think we played this yesterday, but if we didn't, this was Pat Leahy yesterday being prescient. This bill was voted out of the Intelligence Committee 11 to 13, or 11 votes out of 13, and he was decrying it. This is the Democratic senator from Vermont who is chairman of the Judiciary Committee, talking about his peers on the Intelligence Committee and this FISA bill.
The fact that they're bringing so much pressure on the Intelligence Committee, and it presses to be believed the Intelligence Committee is about to cave on this.
And they did.
Pressure on this committee to immunize past illegal conduct is because they know that it was illegal conduct and that there's no saving grace for the president to say, well, I was acting with authority. Otherwise, there wouldn't be so much pressure on us to immunize illegal conduct by either people acting within our government or within the private industry.
Yeah, I want to know where Jay Rockefeller was on this. I mean, this is obscene. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Billy in Alabama. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I was just checking. I haven't really seen, except on blogs, the problem that they have seemed to have uncovered around here. We had a governor down here, Don Sigelman, that was basically thrown in jail along with a CEO of another company that for basically, in what amounts to, sounds like a political vendetta, that emanated from Karl Rove.
And the guy who provided the testimony against him, which was used by the federal attorney down there, the U.S. attorney, to prosecute him, also gave similar testimony about two major Republicans, and they were not prosecuted. But Don Siegelman, the Democrat, was prosecuted and is now sitting in jail. I've done 2 one-hour shows on that, on this program, Billy, in the last 3 or 4 months. As far as I can tell, nobody else is talking about it.
Do you think that the emails that they're trying to hide up there, that say they had lost, is this thing somehow related to that?
Yes.
Or is it?
Yeah, I think this is
so many other things it could be related to.
I think this is probably the biggest of all the smoking guns. And all along, I've been saying we don't need to look at the U.S. attorneys who were fired. We need to look at the U.S. attorneys who kept their jobs, because what were they doing keeping their jobs on behalf of the administration that allowed them to keep their jobs? And down in Alabama is the big one. Because there you have a governor who, frankly, Riley, Governor Riley, right, is the guy?
Right.
Yeah. Riley, I mean, that election was decided after the polls closed, all of a sudden, and Siegelman was ahead, and all of a sudden they found, 13,000 votes or something on a voting machine? And in the middle of the night? and said, oh, gee, look at this. This voting machine was miscalibrated. Looks like the Republican won, even though we reported that the Democrat won. And Siegelman tried to protest that, and he was roundly trashed and ridiculed, particularly in right-wing hate radio all across the state of Alabama. And then, bang, he found his butt in jail. And it's just, in my opinion.
I mean, did the same thing not happen to the guy, the communication company the other day? Now he's in jail for not going along with it. These people to me just seem, these Republicans for some reason, I mean, they seem to be the most vicious type of people. I mean, I remember a interview that Dick Cheney had talking about Nancy Pelosi coming into the, you know, being the new speaker. And he says, basically, and you're going to talk to this woman, he says, well, no, not really. And they asked why. See, he said, well, because she's a Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
I mean, it's all, and I was so thrown back by that. It's just,
you're not going to talk
to a Democrat. I would talk to a Republican if I was in the same situation or a Democrat. I would talk to my opposition.
Yeah. Well, see, that makes you a liberal there. Billy, as Mr. O'Reilly says,
all those clowns over at the liberal radio network, we could incarcerate them immediately. Will you have that done, please? Send over the FBI and just put them in chains?
Yeah. So anyhow, Billy, we're on it, on the Don Siegelman story, and keep it going. You know, keep talking about it on the blogs. Keep the word out.
There's nothing down here on it. There's nothing.
Yeah. Well, if anything pops or any more information comes out, be sure to let us know. And because I have been reporting on it, and my listeners are aware of it. And I really think that this is the lever that could pry open the entire administration. But we'll see.
What, do you think they're going to get those emails, or can they get those emails?
I think the administration is going to successfully stall until the election, and then after the election, the new administration is going to be so busy trying to get things done that there's not going to be any retroactive prosecution. Bush is going to get away with it, just like he got away with his insider trading when he had Harkin Oil, and just like he got away with going AWOL for more than a year from the Texas Air National Guard. Say what?
Even if they do go after him, doesn't he have a farm in Argentina, just like with the rest of the Nazis?
Yeah, it wasn't Argentina. I think it was Bolivia or something like that. But, yeah, or Paraguay. I've read those stories. I don't know. But, frankly, his family has so much money and so much power, I don't think it matters. And you know, I think it's a shame. I would like to see these guys held to account. I very much like to see them held to account. But I don't have a lot of hope for that. And so setting hopes for vengeance aside, I think that, you know, at a certain level, we need to be focusing on what we can do proactively. Obviously, I'm gung-ho for impeachment and for prosecution. Maybe the international community will do something with this. I don't know. Ellen Ratner's brother, Michael Ratner, the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org is their website, has been, you know, I mean, he was trying to get the Germans to prosecute Don Rumsfeld and George Bush for war crimes.
One last question. Did Nixon have a lower rating when he left office than 24%?
I think he was around 23 or 24%. I think he was right in that neighborhood, Billy. And yeah, that tells you something.
Wow,
Billy, thanks a lot for the call. And frankly, what the difference between Nixon and Bush was the press. We had a largely free and independent press at the time of Watergate, and we have a largely corporate press now. 57 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Well, this piece of FISA legislation, this is particularly troubling in the Senate, that is going to give immunity to the lawbreakers. Again, one of the levers that could be used to pry open what's going on in this administration, criminal prosecution. And Democrats, along with Republicans on the Senate Intelligence Committee, going along with that idea. At the same time that the telecom companies and the administration are saying, well, we didn't commit any crime. There's no crime here. So why do you need to immunize them? Or is this a variation on the old Nixon doctrine?
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Yeah. Well, Chris Dodd has upped the ante. He said he's going to put this thing on hold. And now I'm hearing talk that possibly Harry Reid's going to ignore that, because putting a piece of legislation on hold in the Senate is not an absolute legal thing. It doesn't necessarily kill it. It is more like kind of the old boy, okay, I'll respect you if you'll respect me, and even the secret holds and all that. It was all about, you know, the collegial, these are kind of the rules, but, you know, this is... And it could be, you know, if the leadership of the Senate decides to ignore the hold, they can. So what's going to happen? This is Chris Dodd over, there's a YouTube of this over at the Daily Kos.
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and I'm asking you to join me in that effort here. I don't believe it's right for telephone companies to be turning over the private telephone records of American citizens to the Bush administration without prior judicial approval. This is a basic fundamental right of privacy in our country, and I'm going to do everything I can to see to it that Congress strips this provision out of the bill. I will do everything I can, including filibustering this legislation if necessary. My hope is the hold would work, but if it doesn't, then I'm prepared to go to the floor of the United States Senate and filibuster this. I don't do that very often. Very, very rarely have I done it. But I cannot any longer tolerate this administration's drumbeat here to deprive us of basic rights in this nation here. This false dichotomy that we're only going to be safer if we give up our rights is something I cannot stand for any longer.
Amen. Chris Dodd, good on you, sir. And I'm willing to assume that this is not, you know, because he's running for Congress, or for president, rather, because Chris Dodd has always been in the forefront in many regards. I shouldn't say always been. In many regards, been at the forefront of progressive issues and certainly constitutional issues. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything goes Friday. We can talk about anything you'd like. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania, listening to WPTT. Hey, Bonnie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I'm calling about your guest on Tuesday who wrote A Brief History of Neoliberalism.
Right, David Harvey.
Okay. Since I missed the first minute or two of the interview, I wondered if you had asked him the history of using that term, liberalism or neoliberalism for that matter, as it applies to economics, since that always tends to frustrate you as it does me.
Yeah. No, I didn't, but I can give you the elevator speech version of it. Desuet de Tracy was a French economist who in the early 1800s, like 1804, wrote a book, the title of which I forget, but was basically the beginning of what's referred to as the French School of Liberal Economics. And he was the first guy to come out with a number of ideas, not everything he said, but much of what de Tracy said was essentially let the market decide, leave it up to businesses, government shouldn't be involved in regulation, it's all too complex for government to be involved, this kind of thing. And that is... You know, when you say liberal around the world, everywhere except the United States, what people are referring to is what we refer to here as basically Reaganomics or conservative economics. And then the neoliberalism, the new liberalism, is let's internationalize this, let's globalize this, let's put this on steroids, which is the quote free trade end quote. Portion of it. Let's diminish the power of sovereign governments and hand that power over to entities controlled by corporations like the World Trade Organization.
Okay. Well, I was reading The Left Hand of God by Rabbi Lerner, and then I did some stuff on Wikipedia, and I came to understand that liberalism was the term used for the period when capitalism overthrew the feudal order. So. Yeah. In other words, liberalized, I guess.
Well, there's that. I mean,
terms, liberalism and feudalism, and they were applied years and years later in hindsight.
Yeah, and arguably, I mean, that was liberalism coming out of the Enlightenment was a whole different thing. It had nothing to do with economics. I mean, when George Washington said, "I hope I shall ever see America become a more liberal society," he was talking about freedom. He was talking, and that's why when Tracy applied those terms to economics, you know, freedom. It was perceived as the liberal school of economics, and so it's really a mess for anybody who tries to explain it in the United States.
Yes, it's like liberating the aggregated capital, not humans.
Yeah,
except for those who have the most capital, you know, hence the invisible hand guys.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wondered if you had talked about it, and you didn't, but I still like to talk about these things because I find them pretty interesting.
I do too, Bonnie. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Sansara in New York City. Hey, Sansara, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. What's in your mind today?
Well, I know you had David Horowitz on before, and I have to speak about this so-called Islamo-Fascism Awareness Week, which he's billing as the largest conservative uprising on campuses, which, you know, and he's saying he's trying to raise awareness of concern for women in the Muslim world. And he's putting people like Rick Santorum on the road as part of this tour. Rick Santorum, who is a Christian fascist, who doesn't believe that women should have the right to birth control. He's putting Ann Coulter on the road, who says women shouldn't vote. This man has no right to speak on behalf of women anywhere. And in reality, this is one of his lies, that he cares about women. In order to confuse people, to disorient people, to intimidate people and whip up support for what is an unjust war of aggression in Iraq, and potentially a new war in Iran, which ironically has actually strengthened the hand of Islamic fundamentalism in the Middle East. If he really cared about women in the Muslim world, the first place he would protest is the White House. I just think this guy needs to be, and his so-called Islamo-Fascism Awareness Week needs to be exposed. He needs to be confronted with the truth of the policies he's actually, you know, a self-described battering ram for, the Bush policies.
Yeah. Well, you just did a very good job of that, Sansara.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and thank you. Is there something you wanted to add?
Well, I wanted to let people know that there is responses being organized across the country. There's a website in particular called defendcriticalthinking.com, and it is people, professors speaking out, students organizing, to really confront this effort on every campus and have people go in and say, okay, let's open up the debate. What they're saying does not hold up to critical examination. And let's confront them with the facts of the programs that they're supporting, the effects they have in the Middle East, and some of the history of Horowitz. The other thing I can't talk about him without mentioning, he's somebody who, when there was a movement for reparations among black people in this country, there still is, but when it was more prominent going on, he took out full-page ads in a lot of historically black colleges, newspapers, that said against reparations, including that black people should be grateful for slavery. What about the debt that black people owe America?
Yeah, and I think I remember.
Yeah, this is a guy who really
I'm assuming you're the Sansara of the World Can't Wait group.
Yes, I am.
You've got a great YouTube about that out there, and I would encourage people to Google it or track it down, or maybe you can give us a URL for it.
Yeah, it's on the homepage of worldcantwait.org. It is it's a great exposure of Horowitz, and the last thing I'll say is I think that the danger of this week being unexposed, unopposed, cannot be overestimated. Horowitz has been on a rampage. It's purging dissident professors, targeting them, having students snitch on them. It's a whole McCarthy
atmosphere.
Oh,
I know. The last time he was on the program, he was going off on how there's all these liberals on campus, and I'm like, oh, of course, people get more educated, they become more liberal. It's like, what a surprise!
Yeah, and that this is really at a time when more than ever we need critical thought. We need people debating and discussing foreign policy and what is the relation. Why do people around the world hate America to the degree that they do? What is involved in that, and what's our obligation to stopping what are war crimes and crimes against humanity being committed by our government in our name? And if that's not, this is Horowitz's assault on academia is very bound up with shutting down critical thought in society and in silencing campuses.
Well, as is conservative activity right across the board.
Yeah, and I really do want to point people to defendcriticalthinking.org, to worldcantwait.org, and to say, you know, that this needs to be, he needs to be debunked wherever he shows up.
Great. Thank you for being so articulate.
Thanks, Tom.
Appreciate it, and thanks for calling in. 16 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, our websites. It's Anything Goes Friday. Drop by, say hi. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this.
The Tom Hartmann Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Radio. Just too far away to see. Radio operator,
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Why doesn't the Senate, and I'm not claiming originality in this, Elizabeth Holzman first put it forward as in an op-ed over at the Truth Out, but I think it's a great idea. Why doesn't the Senate, as happened during Watergate, when you had an attorney general have to step down under a cloud, why doesn't the Senate say, we will confirm the new attorney general if that new attorney general will appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the possibilities of crimes being committed by this administration? Now, this is pretty straightforward stuff. I commend to you, and thanks for the tip of the hat to the folks in the chat room who passed this along to me, Elizabeth Holzman's piece over at truthout.org. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. An observation, if I may. Today, America, to me, is a classic example. America, we also cherish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for your program. You're doing an outstanding job. America, we so cherish, is a classic example of a democracy that once was so healthy,
mm-hmm,
to one that is being driven by the politics of fear.
Yeah, I would say that
being led and driven by the politics of trust and hope. But we're led by a so-called president who is one word is his legacy to me more than anything else. I thought it was that he was supposed to come in the United States, and he said, no, to me the word is indifference. This man is indifferent.
That's an interesting one, Gary. Indifferent. I would say that he, yeah. Let me think about that a little bit, because my take on it was more that he was self-aggrandizing or hostile even. But I think that now, keep in mind, when FDR talked about fear and fear itself, he was not talking about World War II. He was talking about the Great Depression. He was talking about economics. And I think, frankly, that economic fear is driving Americans far more aggressively than is Islamofascist fear or fear of terrorism, frankly.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Well said. Thank you, President Roosevelt. David in Hollywood, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi. Your listeners today have started to broach the subject of the real threat to America from within, and that is Christo-fascism.
Are you talking about the Tim McVeigh variety?
No, I'm talking about the George Bush, Pat Robertson.
Jerry Falwell's.
You've got to kill the terrorists before the killing stops. And I'm for the president. Chase them all over the world. If it takes 10 years, blow them all away in the name of the Lord.
That kind of thing.
That kind of thing, which really grows out of the belief in a mythical person, shall I say, your little friend who only you can talk to. And you had an atheist on the show a while back, and you made the claim that he could not prove that there wasn't a God any more than you could prove that there was one.
Correct.
And I suppose he couldn't, but I certainly can. There are many proofs. But
you can't prove a negative.
Well, many ways.
No, no, I'm willing to acknowledge right up front that I can't prove I can't prove this positive. I can't prove that divinity exists. But I'll tell you, in all regards, you can't prove a negative.
Well, actually,
or in most regards.
Actually, there are many ways. There's a mathematical method, a physical method, a statistical method.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes about 15 minutes. I think you probably.
No, but all of those arguments could have been applied to the existence of radio waves 150 years ago. All of them.
Well, there's physical evidence of radio waves.
I beg your pardon?
There's physical evidence of radio waves.
There is now. There wasn't 150 years ago.
But there is also.
But there were radio waves 150 years ago.
Oh, sure there were. And there was light 150 years ago. But of the physical proof wouldn't apply to radio waves. You try to use that on radio waves, it doesn't work. But it does work on God. For example, if you take a spoon and heat it up and walk into a room, it gradually cools off and the heat spreads out. You wouldn't expect to stand in the room and suddenly have the spoon in your hand get hot. Well, in the same way, if God has any energy and God is everywhere, that energy is going to disperse, and God won't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
That's entropy.
Sure. And you know, entropy and physics, I'm familiar with those concepts. I just don't see how that's proof for or against the
it's
existence of divinity.
It's only proof against the God if God can do anything.
Right.
If you think God can't do
anything. Okay, then you're very narrowly defining God as a being who has intellect and intent and does things physically in the world.
Well,
and I'm not sure that everybody...
believers tend to squirm. My job is to pin them down.
Okay, well, thank you, David. And I'm not sure that everybody who considers themselves spiritual would define divinity in that frame. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Senator Larry Craig.
Hey there, what you doing out there? Here in this men's room, these stalls could be 10 rooms for romance. I can hear somebody going. I can hear the dryer blowing. You've got a flight soon, but I think I might soon have no pants. Oh, my sweetmeat, tap 3 times on the pipe if you want me. Twice on the pipe if you brought me a leash. Oh, my darling, means you'll meet me in the jetway. Come on, knock on the door if you're not the police.
34 minutes past the hour. Hey, just a reminder, a bunch of stuff coming up this weekend, or the weekend after this. I'll be in Seattle on the 26th, signing books at the Elliott Bay Bookstore, on the 27th at Sonoma State University, receiving the first place in the Project Censored Award. In November 3rd in Albuquerque, signing books at Hastings Books and Music at 5 p.m. November 5th in Portland, Oregon at Powell's Books on Burnside. And November 9th, KPHX is putting on a gig. You can get the information at 1480kphx.com at the Changing Hands Bookstore in Tempe from 3 to 5 p.m., and it should be a lot of fun. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. In fact, speaking of books, this is, you know, hitting the road for the book tour for my new book, Cracking the Code, and I just was looking on Amazon. And in civics, under books, nonfiction, government, civics, so in the category of civics, Cracking the Code is now the number 3 best-selling book, and the number 1 best-selling book on Amazon in the category of civics is Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and What We Can Do About It, by me. So forgive the bragging rights, but that's kind of cool. Tina in Mukilteo, Washington. Am I pronouncing that right, Tina?
Yeah, you didn't pronounce it. No, it's Mukilteo.
Ah, there you go. Okay, Mukilteo.
Yeah, it's Mukilteo, Washington. We're located between Seattle and Everett. Everett.
Oh, okay. It's a
and
place
I hear that you're going to be here on the 26th.
That's right. Yeah.
October.
At Elliott Bay Bookstore.
Okay, we'll see if we can meet you there. But
great.
I'm calling on, there were two shows last night on Channel 9 here and Channel 12. They're both PBS stations. One was on Cheney's Law. Have you heard about that?
Yes, I have.
It is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute. Have you seen it?
I don't remember. I don't think I have. No.
You try and see if you can, because we saw it on Tuesday night and we saw it again last night. It's unbelievable, and we finally taped it so we could see it again.
Yeah, I'll have to look for it. This is the one that Lynn Cheney is so upset about. The profile.
She's upset about it?
Yeah.
Well, listen, then there was another one on Frontline that had to do with Iraq.
Yes. Now, I didn't see that either, and I'm sorry, I just don't watch that much television, but frankly have that much time, but I'm going to have to track that one down too, because you're the third caller who has called in the last couple of days and said, this is an amazing thing, you've got to see this Frontline report.
According to this, my friends that I know up here say, why can't we hold them for treason?
Yeah, well, this is, absolutely. Carl Wolfson, the guy who does the morning show here on KPOJ, AM 620 in Portland, Oregon, where I'm originating this show from, he saw it, and he said it's just, he said it's nothing you don't know already. He said, but it's organized in such a way that when you're done watching the movie, you're saying these guys should be in prison.
And
I have a lot of respect for Carl's opinions. Tina, thank you very much for sharing that with us and calling in. Kate in Arcata, California. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Tom. Well, first I have to say you definitely are ADHD, and you're a perfect example of why we need ADHD Edison genes in our culture and in the world.
Well, thank
Woo-hoo!
You.
Right on.
Hyperactive and proud of it.
Exactly. Anyway, the reason why I called is to defend Pete Stark when he said that, implied or actually used the words that Bush would rather deny children health care but send them to Iraq to get their heads blown off for the president's amusement.
Right.
The reason why I defend him is not because of speculation about his psychology, but I defend him for telling the truth, because we all, I don't know if all of us, but I distinctly remember watching or hearing him say at that national press conference speech that he gave, oh, are there any weapons of mass destruction under the desk? I don't see them here. I don't see them there. It was a joke.
Yeah, but that was written by his joke writers. It was in poor taste. I think everybody agrees on that. Here's what I would say about what Pete Stark said. If he had simply changed the word from amusement to political power, I would completely agree with him, because in my opinion, the primary reason why George Bush wanted to go into Iraq was because he thought it would get him political capital. And in fact, that's what he told his biographer in 1999, before he even was running for president, was that if he ever became president, he wasn't going to make the mistake his father made.
Yes.
and have a 100-hour war. He was going to have a real war. He was going to take down Saddam Hussein, and it was going to give him enough political capital that he could roll back the New Deal, that he could get done everything he wanted to done and get done and have a successful presidency, quote unquote. So I think if Pete Stark had said everything else in the quote, perfect, except that amusement part, because that's so subjective, and it puts it in the realm of character assassination.
Well,
and I think instead we should put it in the realm of policy assassination and say he did this because he's willing to kill our soldiers for political gain. I think, frankly, that's even more horrifying.
You do have a really good point. I just think that it was a visceral response or a visceral comment that we all have a visceral response to as having some validation.
I agree.
And on the face that we see and things like that. But
yeah.
I think you've convinced me.
Okay.
That wasn't hard to do.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate the call. And I think that's... You know, and the problem is that Pete Stark handed something to the right wing. On the other hand, you know, good on him in that he stood up and spoke out. And frankly, his comment is being repeated with much histrionics and much bloviating by right wingers all over the place and the news media. And I think that probably it's a comment that needs to be repeated and a lot of people need to hear, even if they disagree with it. Gets people thinking. And that's a desirable thing in my world. Charlie in Rochelle Park, New Jersey. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? I don't know if this proves out across the whole population, but in my experience, everyone that I know who's involved in the Draft Gore movement are all people who in 2000 voted for Nader because they couldn't bring themselves to vote for Al Gore. I think there's something...
There's a certain irony there, isn't there?
I'm sorry?
There's a certain irony there, isn't there?
It's amazing. There's something in the American culture, I think, that there's people who want to be part of a noble losing cause. And my question now is if Al Gore is filling that spot, is this going to hurt Dennis Kucinich, or will it move him up the food chain to become a viable candidate?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I think that Dennis has such a long road to hoe, in part because of the way the media is organized in this country, and in part because there are some very good candidates that he's up against, that Al Gore probably, you know, whether he is or isn't in the race, I doubt it's going to change that equation very much at all. I'm curious what it might do to Chris Dodd and John Edwards, who are also relatively progressive.
The media just wants this
to be a battle between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and I think that that's because the Republicans have decided that those are the two that would be easiest for them to beat.
And the
Republicans are basically the media. Yeah, yeah, the national media. And it just baffles me why every time there's a poll done, every time there's a poll done in any progressive environment, you know, you do a poll over at the Daily Kos, you do it, we're doing a poll on in Portland here at 620kpoj.com, you know, this local radio station, presidential straw poll. Every
right.
time you do these kind of polls, we've done it here on this radio show a few times. We're not going to today, but we will probably one day next week, where we just say we're going to open the lines for 12 minutes and take calls, and David just writes down, you know, and everybody just says a name, and so they get to vote. Every single time that happens, the big winners typically are Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards. And Chris Dodd is coming up third, and then Barack Obama, and then Hillary Clinton's down at the bottom. And yet, when you look at the national polls, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are at the top. And I don't get it. I do. I think that the national polls are asking people basically what their name, you know, they're asking about name recognition. They're
right.
asking about agreement on policy. And although it's being presented as that, and because Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are getting all the press, they're getting all the name recognition, and the probability is that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. I mean, I think that is becoming increasingly likely, although, you know, and who knows? And as I've said in the past, if she is, I will support her.
Well, that's why I think there's been this mass media focus on fundraising.
Yeah.
I mean, to throw out numbers in the millions is to make the average person to reaffirm to the average person that, yeah, this is so far removed from me, I can't have any input.
Well, you know, Charlie, why the media would be concerned about how much money a candidate is raising.
Oh, right, ad revenue.
Because all that money is going to end up in the pocket of the media. And so, of course, oh, this guy's got 20 million, this one's got 22 million, this one's got 27 million, and it's all going to end up with us.
Well, and it's also kind of lazy journalism. I mean, it's a story that writes itself.
Well, it's a metric.
There's much money, and that's what they did.
Yeah, it's an easy metric. It's out there. It's a very easy to grab hold of metric. Charlie, thanks a lot for the call and for raising the issue. But it's a shame. I mean, our system is so broken. What I am calling for is that we do away with primaries altogether. I believe that we need to go back to the smoke-filled rooms and let party activists decide who the candidates are going to be, like we did for about 180 years or so, maybe 200 years. And then people like you and me who want to get active in the party can become the party activists, and you'll have people who are actually representing the base of the party rather than the people who can raise the most money to run the most ads. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto, and Lauren Kirshner at Air America in New York, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, to our callers, and to you, our listeners, my listeners, for listening to the program. It makes it all possible. Got a note here from James. He said, I just thought I would let you know this morning that I called both my senators, Cantwell and Murray, and my congressman, Adam Smith, as well as Senator Harry Reid, on the subject of Senator Dodd's recent act of hold on this FISA bill. I've also contacted Senator Dodd's office to express my support and let him know that I hope he doesn't give up. I got through to all my representatives, but was unable to get through to Senator Reid to express my outrage, but I will keep trying. And he says, urge your listeners to do the same. And I agree. The telephone number for Congress is 202-225-3121. Let your senators know how you feel about FISA and about spying. And if you want there's a whole bunch of different toll-free numbers. They come and go. As far as I can tell, the most current list we put up on a website called callcongress.org. C-A-L-L-C-O-N-G-R-E-S-S, callcongress.org. So you can check that out. 1-866-303-2270. Our telephone number, Christy in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Christy.
Hi, Tom. I disagree with you about the person who wrote the book Bush on the Couch. I, too, am a therapist, and I felt for a long time that Bush is mentally ill. And I don't believe that a person who's mentally ill is capable of formulating rational policy. So I don't believe it's a matter of him as a person and his problems or his policies. I don't see how you can distinguish that way.
Hmm. Well, that's you make a good point, Christy. I don't have a comeback for that. Other than that, it's not just Bush. I mean, you have basically the entire Republican Party going down the same road with him, and they have all along. You've got large chunks of the media going down this road with him. Again, I'm not condemning Pete Stark for what he said, and there are certain things that I might say outside when I'm not on the air that I might say in a book signing, for example, in a public forum, but I wouldn't say on the air because I have a certain level of respect for and try to maintain a certain level of decorum in this environment. And I think the same is true of the floor of the House of Representatives. In fact, it's even more so true of the floor of the House of Representatives. If Pete Stark had said what he said outside the House of Representatives, I don't think that there would there be all the hoop-de-doop. But he said it on the floor, and there, I think, the history, I mean, going all the way back to Jefferson and Adams yelling at each other, the history has always been attack the policy, not the person.
But
and
if you've got an incompetent of a person in that office who is not capable, then...
Well, then you invoke the whatever it is, 26th Amendment or whatever, you know, the one of when the chief executive becomes non-compos menace, and that was not what Pete Stark was arguing. He was not arguing that Bush should be removed from office because he's no longer competent.
It's what I would argue, though.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wouldn't disagree with you on it.
Okay.
I echo Pete Stark's sentiment. I just think that had he, and I suspect this, that he would probably say the same thing, had he thought it through a little bit before he said it, he probably would have replaced that word entertainment at the end with something like, you know, for the president doing this to gain political power. I mean, you know, put it back into the policy realm. But I also agree with you, Christy, and that irrational people don't make rational policies. And I think that Justin Frank has a strong argument to be made that George Bush is an irrational person. Christy, I got to move along. Thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
Great to hear from you. Sarah in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Hey, Sarah. Sarah?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mr. Hartman, I have a question. I'm a college student in Michigan, and I study political science, and I thought I had a fairly good grasp of politics, but this Michigan primary is confusing a lot of people. I'm sure you know that we've moved the primary to January 15th, and the legislators and representatives in Michigan, Republican and Democrat, all seem to support this fairly well. However, now there's candidates that are taking their name off the ballot. They're
right.
In fear of consequences from the DNC, among other things.
Right.
What are these consequences? What are they so afraid of? Should Michigan voters be insulted that they're taking the name off the ballot?
Perhaps, perhaps. This is one of those things where in my mind, there's not some clear line. What the DNC is trying to prevent is states leapfrogging each other. All, you know, every state, whoever are the first half a dozen states are the states that are going to get most of those tens of millions of dollars that are being raised. Remember, we were talking a minute ago about why is the media paying all this attention to the money that's being raised by the candidate? Because it's going to be spent on radio and television stations and in newspapers in a small number of states, at least in the primaries. And so by moving their primaries up, the states are boosting their own internal economic activity. And Michigan, God knows, really needs a boost. I mean, Michigan has been hammered the hardest by 26 years of Reaganomics. And so Michigan moves up their primaries, but the DNC has been saying all along, you guys do this and you mess with this system that is working well right now, at least they think so, and we're not going to play. I mean, you know, you can have a party, but we're not going to come. And Michigan said, well, we're going to do it anyway, and the DNC said, okay, fine, we're not going to play. And, you know, I understand all that, and it's beyond the realm of my opinionating. In other words, I'm not sure if Michigan's right or the Democratic National Committee is right on this, and I just think it's a shame that it's being played out this way. I frankly would rather see the DNC say, okay, fine, you know, we will do this in Michigan. But then what's going to happen? Then Indiana says, well, no, we're going to go ahead, and then Oklahoma says, no, we're going to be the first. And you know, it's you'd end up with you know, somebody at some point has to say, enough, we're going to stop. And it's crazy, frankly, that we're doing primaries, you know, we're talking about doing primaries almost a year before the general election. So,
right.
Anyhow, Sarah, that's everything I know about it. I hope it was somewhat helpful. I doubt it was. Coming up Monday, I'll be challenging R. Emmett Tyrell, who claims there's a declared war on conservative talk radio.
All right, Berman from The Nation is here on Rudy's Dirty Money. That and the best of the rest of the news and your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, and have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.